not again. Guys, how are we gonna get this week's African Now show to air? Welcome to this week's African Now show, in which we investigate why Africa's most developed economy relies on power from its neighbors. South Africa, a country rich in resources and technology, increasingly finds itself in the dark in the biggest energy crisis it's ever faced. Vuvu, where are you?
Hi, Paula. I'm here, and these are our Johannesburg head offices. I do have with me a few of our colleagues, and unfortunately, we just had a power outage. But lucky for us, we do have a generator that should be kicking in very soon. The very unfortunate part about all of this is that only 2% of South Africans have generators. The rest of the country continue to stay in the darkness with no light, no power, no warmth during these load shedding days. And because we do have a generator in the company, it should be kicking in very soon. There you have it. There goes the power for us. That's a very unfortunate part for the rest of the country.
These are the night streets of Johannesburg, where not only is there a power crisis, but also an increase in crime, making the city the world's crime capital. South Africa's deteriorating national electricity grid, Eskom, can no longer accommodate the demand of a population of 60 million people. Last year was the worst on record, with 205 days of rolling blackouts as aging coal-fired power plants broke down and Eskom struggled to find the money to buy diesel for emergency generators. That record looks set to be beaten, as every day this year there have been outages. Our correspondent Nulu Vuye Nkunge gives an overview of how South Africans are at their wits end.
South Africa's ever-worsening power crisis, in which homes and businesses spend more than 10 hours without electricity, is starting to strangle Africa's most developed economy.
When load shedding is going, it's too bad, because first thing we, our loss, our profit, then our freezer are not working. Like when electricity is gone, like we can't do anything. Sometimes we close early, then have to wait for electricity, then we have to come and open and close 9 o'clock. So it's take like too much time, and like, yeah, we losing our profit. And especially the generator is here, I mean, you can see every time, maybe 2-3 times we on generator, we buying petrol like every day 500 rand, 600 rand, and that's our profit.
The streets of Johannesburg have gotten quite intense and become more difficult to navigate on a daily basis as a result of these traffic lights that are not working.
The traffic lights that are not working are really a problem. They are also feeding into the crime in this country. We get robbed of our positions, and we get to work and other places very late. You find yourself having to leave 2 hours before just to get to a place.
You become defeated because it's not something you can solve within a minute. It's not something you can solve within a week. We don't know how long is this situation going to last us. How much can our economy take out of this?
This situation has really affected us to a greater extent, so that we are left with options of trying to look at other avenues and stuff. So yeah, it really did affect us to a greater extent, I must say. Okay, we did look at hiring generators and opting for things like maybe reschedule bookings and stuff, or perhaps take it to another workshop or something. That really did affect our business flow. We have a workshop, but we can't even work here because of load shedding and stuff. So yeah, I'm actually thinking of closing the workshop.
The South African energy crisis has gotten so bad that it's now become a major crisis that needs to be solved as soon as possible. And unless major plans are put in place, analysts and experts say the next 5 years could become a disaster. For RT, I'm Nolu Vuyo Kunge in Johannesburg.
This is costing South Africa $51 million a day. This year, it's already amounted to $13 billion to date. Unsurprisingly, the South African phrase of the year is load shedding, which describes the never-ending rolling blackouts. Just like people in other parts of the world check the weather, South Africans check their phones to see the Eskom scheduled blackouts so they can plan when to bath, when to cook, and when to charge their phones.
There is no reason whatsoever for South Africa to continue to endure the economically catastrophic and financially ruinous power cuts, otherwise known or referred to as load shedding. Because these power cuts, not only are they unwarranted, but they are actually avoidable. But we needed to have taken steps a few years ago. For example, South Africa has got over 47,000 megawatts of installed capacity, which is based on a fossil fuel, which is coal. Now, coal is to South Africa what oil is to the Saudis, or what gas and oil is to the Russians. We therefore should treat it in the same way. And unless we can really harness to the full potential our coal resources, I can't see how we're going to get out of this. If anything, we are risking the imminent total collapse of the electricity grid with results of the rolling blackouts that we are enduring, because the generation system as well as the grid were not designed for exactly the situation that we find ourselves in. But there's no end in sight in a short order of time, purely because the government, there's a lot of ineptitude, there's a lot of lethargy, not really knowing what to do next. And every day that they delay to take the correct decisions, it just means that the situation is getting more and more dire. We are getting into the winter months, and the total collapse of the grid, I'm afraid, is imminent.
The irony is that right next door, South Africa, is a country with much less infrastructure, but no power disruptions. I visited northern Mozambique, which is home to one of the biggest hydroelectric schemes in Africa. Welcome to what locals call the pride of Mozambique. You have here Africa's fourth largest man-made dam, and it is known as the Cahora Bassa Hydroelectric Dam. Cahora Bassa, in one of the local Mozambican languages, means finish the job, probably alluding to the fact that this project began in the 1960s by the Portuguese and took some 15 years to complete. It includes a variety of electrical infrastructures that both generate, produce, transmit, and commercialize power. Now, here you see a natural gorge. So you have the Zambezi River coming down from this direction, and on either side you have these parallel slopes that come down into a kind of V shape. Over there are the sluice gates, and once those are opened, the water floods through, turning the turnstiles and the turbines, which in turn generates electricity. And that electricity is used here in Mozambique and also neighboring countries like Zimbabwe and South Africa. Now, think about this. It generates 530 kilowatts of electricity that travel 1,400 kilometers to the South African border, where they're picked up by the South African electrical grid, Eskom, and those parallel lines are known as Zeus and Apella. That is an important source of electricity for South Africa. And not only is this project used to provide electricity, but it's an important source of income for the local community. A town has sprung up here on the banks of the Cahora Bassa Dam. So one of the important hydroelectric plants in Africa, in fact, the second largest one that there is.
2,075 megawatts in capacity, second just to the Egyptian one, the Amber, which is about 2,100. I even think that the Mozambican one is bigger, but that when you look at the huge amount of potential and capacity that it has to power Mozambique, there is the price of Mozambique, but it's also the price of SADC, because it's the largest in SADC. We just need to get to do more with it. Mozambique can be a game changer, but the investments need to go in, because what's going to happen is that there is a $100 million project that was approved by the African Development Bank on this same hydropower dam that could really power and really increase capacity and move fast. That's good, but that's not going to be enough. They have the power of abundant natural gas that is being shipped to Europe to power Europe at this time when we have an energy crisis right down here in South Africa and in SADC. We could use that gas right there to drive up some of the stuff that Sasol is doing through Matola Angola and the Romco power dam, so you the Romco pipelines. So you are going to see gas coming in that can fix our problems right now. But also within the Southern African power pool, that plays a big role with their massive advanced deposits that you're seeing in natural gas and also in hydropower. We just need to channel in the investments right there, because Mozambique unfortunately does not have all the finances to be able to deal with the energy infrastructure issues that are needed to move this power into the entire Southern African region, especially South Africa, that is seeing chronic electric shortages, especially with load shedding.
The biggest hydroelectric scheme in Africa finds its home in South Africa's northern neighbor, Zimbabwe. Built in the early 60s, it has in the past been a reliable supplier of electricity, but recently ran into problems with low water levels from drought. Without it, southern African countries would be in more trouble than what they already are.
Kariba Dam was constructed in the 1950s, probably 1950, because it was supposed to provide energy security for both northern and southern Rhodesia. So it has been put in a position whereby it was going to generate over 3,000 kilowatts for both countries, thereby alleviating energy shortages in southern Africa as a whole. So Kariba is a very important aspect when it comes to energy generation, because we are talking of hydro, which has got less carbon footprint than coal. I think if the Russians want to come and invest in energy sector in Zimbabwe, they need to look at renewable energy as a source of energy. You can tell that Zimbabwe has got long hours in terms of sunlight provision. Thereby, I think the greatest initiative should come for renewable energy. I think that's the best sector. Of course, hydro as well. You need to rehabilitate the Kariba Dam, because it's a bit old. It needs rehabilitation, and also it has shown that its inefficiency can affect energy provision for Southern Africa, in Zimbabwe in particular.
Unfortunately, I think lack of investment, underinvestment for years, it seems Zimbabwe somehow being exposed not only to the challenges at the hydro or Wange, rather Kariba, but also you look at the Wange, the 7 and 8, with 300 megawatts from the expansion 7 and possibly the same amount from 8. We certainly don't think it's something which will solve the energy challenges, given the deficit or a gap between the total production and the demand of the industry. And with the GDP growth, and you look at the industry growth at the moment also, we don't think the energy or capacity of Zimbabwe at the moment in the next 5 years will be able to satisfy the demand which we have in this economy.
Unfortunately, nearly 600 million people in sub-Saharan Africa are without electricity, especially in rural areas where infrastructure doesn't exist. The worst is in South Sudan, where only 7% of people have access to electricity. By comparison, Tunisia is the best in providing 100% of its population with power.
Belungile, thank you for joining us. I think it's only fitting that we start with the foundation and you just telling us what exactly is so broken within the African continent.
It's unfortunate that when you look at Africa, you can basically split it sort of between North and the South. If you look at North Africa, they are more than adequately supplied with electricity. You're looking at electrification rates of above 95%. Then you basically have the rest of sub-Saharan Africa, which for some or other reason, you know, finds itself in a situation where more than 600 million of its inhabitants do not have access to electricity. You do need to have sufficient electricity supply, stable electricity supply, and you do need to ensure energy security in order to grow an economy.
And what will it take to power African countries, perhaps?
It's very simple. Political will. Nothing more, nothing less.
Now, from Zimbabwe, where they start using electricity and being active only at night, to Nigeria, where all of this has become a norm, and not to mention where we are in South Africa, this is a crisis. And do you think that this has now become some sort of human rights issue?
You know, if you look at what has been happening around Africa, especially around energy, I would certainly say there is an issue there. It looks at, you know, maybe breaching the constitution in the case of South Africa. It's really at a point where nobody truly understands why African leaders are okay with a situation of this nature. Why is it okay to have electricity off for 20 hours a day? Why is it okay to power up the largest economy in Africa, which is Nigeria, using generators, yet not too far from there, on the other side of the continent, you have Egypt, second largest economy, and they have electrification of above 98%.
And I'm really happy that you mentioned some of the worst and best performing countries within the continent, because if you take a look at Tunisia and South Sudan, what do you think is Tunisia doing that South Sudan could perhaps do as well?
Well, Tunisia is lucky in that it finds itself in a brotherhood of North African nations where they deliberately work together. They also have shared resources. So Tunisia, for instance, primarily uses natural gas. Over 97% of their installed capacity comes from gas. Gas that they've sourced from where? Algeria. If you look at Egypt, for instance, they use gas. They also use oil. Oil that they've sourced from where? Libya. So they have a brotherhood that they're using for their betterhood and their own advancement.
And on that renewable energy narrative, Lungile, there was a lot of promises during the COP27 summit. And amidst it all, governments within the African continent had to come back to their countries and ponder how exactly to deal with the shortage of electricity and power. Do you think that African governments should continue pegging their hopes onto these Western and rich countries, or should they start now to look for alternatives?
You know, one of the telling things around COP27 was how poorer nations around the world, particularly Africa, as well as small island developing states, what we call SIDS, went to COP with these great hopes and, you know, initiatives, especially around funding, obtaining funding for adaptation, mitigation that they required. There is about a $300 billion shortfall of funding for African nations as well as small islands. And this is on an annual basis.
And specifically looking at South Africa, what do you think got us here? Because is it corruption, is it low infrastructure, or just no investment within that sector?
So for South Africa, it is a myriad of issues that started, let me say, in about 2006 already, where there were grid issues in the Northern Cape and in the Western Cape, and this of course then escalated to the rest of the country, where load shedding in earnest started in 2008. At the time, there was a deficit between supply and demand. We had too much, or you know, excessive demand at the time, which exceeded about 37,000 megawatts, whereas supply had not reached that point. At that juncture, the politicians in charge had a mandate, and they had had a mandate from 10 years prior, from about 1997, to actually build new capacity, and they chose not to do anything. Over the years, there's been general mismanagement on those projects, there's been corruption, there were design flaws, bringing us to a point where even in 2023, we've got three units out currently at Gusile as a result of a design flaw, ultimately.
And in terms of progress, how progressive do you think African governments are in trying to fix the energy crisis within the continent?
African governments, not as progressive. If you ask most African governments, even in South Africa itself, what their plans are, they'll tell you about random ideas, concepts that they have, but nothing actionable. There are no 20-year, 30-year plans. However, if you go and you speak to European leaders and you speak to the UK, the US, China, and you ask them what their plans for Africa are, they're very detailed. They know exactly what they want out of Africa. They know exactly what they want to sell to Africa. They know what their prerogative is for the African continent. But our leaders don't seem to have an idea for what we should be doing and what we should look like in order to ensure energy security.
So the challenge is clear. Now for the solution. More and more African countries are looking for sustainable options, one of them being nuclear power and partnerships in the East rather than the West because of sustainability and cost. One of these solutions has already been tabled by Russia for South Africa. To discuss this further, I'm joined by Dr. Kelvin Kim, a nuclear physicist and chief executive of Stratec Business Strategy Communication. Doctor, thank you so much for joining us. Please explain the nuclear deal between Pretoria and Moscow.
Well, it was talk in newspapers about a nuclear deal some years ago, which was just plain and simply not true. What happened was there was an agreement on a technical basis for understanding to begin a relationship with nuclear power. It never got further than that. It was an artificial creation of the anti-nuclear lobby that some secret deal had been arrived at. There was no such thing. I've spoken to very senior people in Pretoria and very senior people in Moscow, and none of them know anything about a so-called secret deal. So there was a basis of understanding signed at a lower level, and it just got escalated out of all proportion incorrectly.
Why was the deal stopped, and can it be renewed?
Well, we were going through a process at the time to acquire a large nuclear power station, and a number of countries were in the running, and Russia was one of them. Russia makes very good large nuclear reactors, there's no doubt about it. So they were undoubtedly in the running. And then South Africa stopped the project at the time. That was when the United States had that subprime mortgage arrangement problem that caused all sorts of international financial problems. There was a change of government in South Africa and a few other factors that put the project on hold, and it's just not been reactivated. Although now there's talk under Minister Mantashe of reactivating the nuclear build in South Africa, both large reactors and small modular reactors.
What are the solutions for South Africa and Africa in terms of the struggle for electricity going forward?
So one cannot take European models and expect that something that works in a country like Germany is going to work here. It just won't. So we've got to look at our own solutions. And quite frankly, wind and solar have their place, but they do not work to produce baseload electricity for a national consumption. So what we need is nuclear power going forward. Coal will still be a mainstay where there is, but nuclear power is the future. And what we need in Africa is small nuclear reactors that do not need a large body of water, such as the South African-developed HTMR-100 nuclear reactor that was being developed in Pretoria. That's an ideal product that was developed to not need water. It runs on gas cooling. So you can put it wherever you like. It does not have to be next to the ocean.
What does nuclear offer Africa that coal and other forms of energy don't?
Well, one great thing about nuclear is it uses so little fuel. You know, if a large nuclear power station like Coburg in South Africa was run by coal, it would be using 6 train loads of coal every day. But Coburg only uses 1 truckload of nuclear fuel every year. So the advantage now for Africa is that you can take fuel to the reactor whenever you like. You don't need a continuous delivery like you need with coal. Coal, you need a railway line, a road, a conveyor belt or something that has to run all of the time. Nuclear can deliver 3, 4, 5 times a year. You can deliver by helicopter if you like. The fuel is so small. And so that is a massive advantage. Also, it is very independent of the uranium price. The uranium is, there's so little of it and so little is used that if the uranium price doubles, it makes very little difference. Whereas if the coal price doubles or gas price doubles, that makes a very big difference. So nuclear is terribly attractive because of the fueling of the reactor.
South Africa was recently given $8 billion by the United States for clean energy. Is this investment enough to secure South Africa's power grid?
It's an $8 billion loan which has been offered and which has to be repaid. And unfortunately, it comes with conditions to say, if you take the money, you've then got to use it the way you're told. And that largely means putting in wind and solar. I emphasize I'm not opposed to wind and solar. Wind and solar has its place, but it is not a solution for South Africa or Africa in general. We need a much more reliable supply of electricity that is not intermittent. We need something like nuclear. We need coal where there's coal. It's not going to go away in the lifetime of anybody watching me speak.
Well, that brings us to the end of this week's show. We hope you found it enlightening. Last week, we explored the decolonization of education in Africa, and the feedback has been quite overwhelming. Thank you to everyone who reached out. As you know, we appreciate your comments, and you can always find us on the social media handles you see on the screen. Next week, we'll be in Mozambique, exploring the greed of foreign powers and the growing problem of Islamic extremism. Do join us again on Tuesday, but until then, for myself and the team, good night.